dat de schitterende dragers ter vooruitgang op hun pad niet achterom kijken. Omdat zij niet over de voorhoede der voorzichtigen struikelen. En verstrikt raken in de verwarring der ongehoorzamen.
Prees niet en wees verheugd. Dit is geen uitzending van Glorie der Mensheid.
Nieuw, Vizier Color. Op levendige feestjes gebeurt er wel eens een ongelukje. Vooral een probleem voor je gekleurde was. Nieuwe Vizier Color trekt de vlekken eruit als een magneet, maar tast de kleuren niet aan. Vizier Color trekt de vlekken eruit, niet de kleuren. Er is natuurlijk ook vertrouwde Vizier Ultra en nog steeds guldens goedkoper.
Hun tijdperk is voorbij, nu is er Ultradreft glazuurbeschermer.
Ik neem een totaal nieuw bord. Elke helft gaat in de machine vol vuile vaat. Het bijtenpoeder tast het glazuur onherstelbaar aan. Wat niet het geval is bij het bord dat met Dreft gewassen is. Het glazuur blijft mooi en zelfs de lasagneschaal is glansend schoon.
Ultradreft glazuurbeschermer beschermt uw servies met glans.
In Naples, the syndicate is called Camorra. For them, it's beyond question and above the law. No one has ever challenged them until now. Now, someone's declared war on the Camorra with a series of bizarre murders.
That's the third one in 24 hours.
And for the first time, the Camorra can't strike back. Someone who knows where they hide, who they love, and when they kill. Someone who knows the only way to stop the Camorra is to destroy them. One woman finds herself trapped in a brutal struggle between sides. A witness.
I'm the only one who could have seen something.
A suspect. A victim.
When he finds out you're still alive,
he'll be right back. Loved by the man who could be the killer.
You're still alive. Nothing you can do about it.
I hate you.
The Chamber of Terror. Watch every corner, because this is where the dead become the living. Autopsy, the most unearthly horrors ever performed on the human body.
Don't tell me you get your kids from this house. My interest is purely professional. Are you a doctor?
Pistol at point-blank range, through the throat and upward. For my money, it's a suicide.
You know your corpses, but I know my souls. I confessed this girl only minutes before you call her suicide.
I don't know anyone more beautiful. And you're trying to destroy her. That's the real crime.
The girl knows more about death than about love. The man teaches her about both. Someone is driving everyone closer and closer to the grave.
Been passing yourself off as a priest for very long, have you?
I am a priest. You hear me? I am a priest.
Suddenly the fear is spreading, and no dead or living body is safe. Murder goes on a slashing rampage that begins and ends in the morgue.
I'm not the one who's crazy! You are!
Neither God nor exorcism can help you now. Where death lives at its most terrifying. Autopsy will take you apart.
Man becomes a target of insanity as he steps into the crosshairs of a homicidal maniac with a need for revenge. A journey into the dark and endless caverns of a sick and twisted mind. A journey into living hell.
While the possibility of a nuclear missile being launched is still slim, a new, much greater threat has just emerged. During the Cold War, Russia manufactured over 100 nuclear warheads housed in briefcases. Today, over half of them are missing. The suitcase bomb. Easy to move, easy to operate, but hard to identify. They can be detonated anywhere. This man was Boris Yeltsin's science advisor. After becoming a key player in Russia's nuclear policy, he discovered the existence of the On the outside, it looks like an ordinary attaché case. Inside, it contains a timer wired up to a miniature nuclear warhead. The warhead consists of a plutonium core surrounded by explosives, which produce an extreme increase in pressure, precipitating a nuclear explosion. The system is activated by a key and can be set to detonate from anything from under an hour to several days. Enough time for whoever planted it to clear the vicinity.
Мощность такого маленького ядерного заряда около килотонны, 1 килотонна. Это очень много. Это значит 1000 тонн обычных взрывчатки.
The bomb was designed to destroy key parts of the enemy's infrastructure, such as entire bridges or airports. But 1 kiloton, a 1/16 of the power of the Hiroshima bomb, could have a devastating effect on a city.
Здесь британский парламент превратился в пыль. Вокруг, если это будет взорвано на Пикадилли...
The blast would flatten almost all buildings within a 500-meter radius of Piccadilly, immediately killing up to 20,000 people.
Whoa, you're enjoying a party. It's great. You guys are dancing so well. It's so amazing. Feeling like you are about to throw up? Careful, buddy. Oh, now you're running towards the washroom. You have symptoms of the disease called as diarrhea. Let me show you what causes diarrhea. During digestion, bile acid synthesized by the liver is absorbed by your small intestine. In a condition known as bile acid malabsorption, your small intestine is less able to absorb nutrients from the food you eat. Hence, the bile enters the large intestine and begins to enrage its lining. This lining contains the glands that secrete and absorb. The process gets absorbed, and this stimulates the release of water and salt. The harmful microscopic parasite called Giardia lamblia also interrupts the process of absorption of water in your intestines, which causes loose and watery stool. The most important way to avoid diarrhea is to avoid coming into contact with infectious agents that can cause it. This means that good hand washing and proper hygiene are very important. Another important way to prevent diarrhea in children is to get them vaccinated against rotavirus, which causes severe diarrhea mostly in young kids. If you have diarrhea, the following may help you feel better. Hydration is very important when you have diarrhea. Drink plenty of water. In most cases of diarrhea, over-the-counter medications can help ease the discomfort that comes with diarrhea. See a doctor for diarrhea that lasts longer than 3 days. Or if you show signs of extreme thirst, dizziness, and decreased urination. Now, you know a lot about diarrhea.
Watch this video before it's removed from the internet due to its high power. Discover the hidden power of 3 cloves and how they can manifest your dreams. This video holds invaluable insights that you won't want to miss, but it may not be available for long due to its potent nature. Consider this. Everything in the universe is energy, and this energy functions like a magnet, drawing in what you focus on. When contemplating the purpose of life, we often ponder various ideas, but ultimately, it boils down to mastering the art of handling, controlling, and directing energy. Reflect on Albert Einstein's renowned equation, which underscores the interconnectedness of energy and matter. It's essential to grasp that all physical objects originated as energy before taking on material form. Material and energy are not separate entities, but rather two sides of the same coin, intricately linked in a continuous cycle of creation and transformation. In this video, you'll delve deeper into the concept that everything, including your thoughts and intentions, carries energetic vibrations that influence the world around you. Learn how harnessing this energy can propel you towards your desires and aspirations. don't miss out on the opportunity to tap into the magnetic power of energy and witness its transformative effects in your life. The ultimate goal for every individual is to master the art of channeling and directing energy, focusing it with precision to bring about desired outcomes. This fundamental principle of manifestation holds profound significance and is rooted in ancient wisdom, including teachings found in the Bible attributed to Jesus of Nazareth. As we embark on the year 2024 AD, it's imperative to revisit the precise words of Jesus recorded in the Bible, which emphasize the transformative power of faith and prayer. Whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it.
We will restore on this planet peace through earth. I am the only candidate who can make this promise to you. I will prevent World War III, and we're very close to World War III.
America at war. In New York, masked flags leading 500,000 marchers in the greatest patriotic and military demonstration ever seen in this or any country. Dramatic, living symbols of America's solidarity, America's unity of purpose. Today, these troops march to the cheers of their countrymen. Tomorrow, they will be on their way to the far-flung battlefronts of the world.
On the farms, in low-rent housing districts, in suburban homes and apartments, and in the better-class neighborhoods of any city or town. For their number is legion, and wherever people live, there also live the mentally retarded. But who are the mentally retarded, and what are they really like? The trainable retarded, with IQs from 25 to 50, usually are not capable of learning much in the way of academic material, even in special schools. However, they can be taught most of the activities of daily living, including the care of personal toilet and hygiene. Learning to dress and undress themselves is something most mentally retarded children can do. Even the more difficult dressing activities, such as tying a bow knot in a shoelace. The intelligence level of the custodial retarded is so low that they cannot be taught even these fundamental life requirements. As a result, they must be attended to by others throughout their entire lifespan. Fortunately, only about 3 out of every 100 of all mentally retarded people are so classified. Really, a very small percentage. A mentally retarded person may be of any age.
Mumps is an extremely contagious viral infection of the salivary glands that most commonly affects children. The most obvious symptom is swelling of the salivary glands, giving the patient a hamster-like face. Causes. Mumps is caused by the mumps virus, which belongs to a family of viruses known as paramyxoviruses. These viruses are a common source of infection, particularly in children. When you get mumps, the virus moves from your respiratory tract, as in your nose, mouth, and throat, into your parotid glands, the saliva-producing glands found on either side of your face, where it begins to reproduce. This causes the glands to swell. The virus can also enter your cerebrospinal fluid, or CSF, which is the fluid that surrounds and protects your brain and spine. Once the virus has entered the CSF, it has spread to the mind. Ovaries in girls and women. Signs and symptoms. Symptoms of mumps usually appear within 2 weeks of exposure to the virus. Flu-like symptom.
The Chamber of Terror. Watch every corner, because this is where the dead become the living.
You have crossed every barrier to reality. You are beyond this limit. And you'll never see it again.
They're coming to get you.
I'm almost certain that someone is after me. Someone from my past. From something that happened in my childhood.
They exist. They're coming to get you. They bear the mark of the devil inside them.
Oh, power of evil. She offers herself.
Drink this, and you will be free.
They may be your wife, husband.
Oh, it's great being a Christian. We have a wonderful future ahead.
Your children.
The orangery gets better until the score's been eaten.
They're coming to get you. This.
So did our ancestors.
The Book of Doom foretold their coming.
An eye for an eye. You see this amulet? I picked it up in an antique shop. It was sold to the dealer by a woman whose ancestors had emigrated from the Carpathian Mountains. She claimed that it had been in her family for 7 generations. It's a strange metal, with a cat's eye for a centerpiece. It can heal, and it can destroy. And you won't forget that. But you'll remember that it's important to obey me. The pain entirely gone. But you'll remember that it's important to obey me. Always.
Who am I? What am I doing? I'm living a nightmare. Horrible urge comes over me. I feel a strength that's almost frightening. It takes possession of me. I must do something awful, but when I try to remember...
You will. And when you know the whole truth, when you realize the part that you've played in saving mankind from his own destruction, you'll be proud.
But in the meantime, what I do, what you make me do, I feel it's wrong.
Wrong? Who's the judge of that? The final result will justify everything. The final result will justify everything.
The expense of total world domination and total world domination, total world domination, and he's using subliminal mind control. The expense of total world domination.
Tell
him. Don't listen to him. He's trying to brainwash all of you. He's trying to brainwash all of you.
Tell
him. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. He's trying to brainwash all of you.
Een enkele keer toont een Nederlandse militair een zo ongekende persoonlijke moed dat alleen de hoogste onderscheiding de waardering daarvoor tot uitdrukking kan brengen.
Het is maar een medaille, hè? Stel je heel voor.
Hij krijgt deze onderscheiding voor zijn optreden als leider, als militair en als mens.
Dank u wel, majesteit.
Wie er is.
Kom je doen? Bij de criminele inlichtingeenheid is betrouwbare informatie binnengekomen over drugs en wapenhandel in uw café.
Wie zit erachter?
We hebben het over MDMA, ecstasy, kok.
Marco, geen taken.
Maar waarom? Die kroeg. Generaal, ik heb nog nooit in mijn leven drugs gebruikt. Nog nooit.
Don't kid yourself. We don't use you for intelligent things around here. We have zombies that can do the things I ask of you in half the time. Now please leave. You're making me nauseous. Bye bye.
What's with this one, Doc?
This box. What about research?
Moet ik me zorgen?
Nachtmerrie?
Nee, dat is heel goed.
De ene oorlog kan dat. Toen wist ik de missing wires.
Als we nu bekend, gaan we u niet verder vervolgen.
Ik ga niet.
Prevalent in today's secular rock music. We don't have to search for hidden words and backmasking to hear the devil's influence in today's pop sound. We've got people paying to hear groups like Black Sabbath, Slayer, with their album titled Hell Awaits, Venom, who titled an album Welcome to Hell, and Demon, who titled an album Possessed. The fact is that you never hear these secular rock groups denounce Buddha or Muhammad. They're only against Jesus or anti-Christ. So don't you be deceived by their demon-praising, money-making tactics.
Warning signs of satanic behavior may be apparent, such as a sudden, bitterly antagonistic attitude towards family and religion, a drastic decline in academic performance, a reclusive behavior pattern, and listening exclusively to heavy metal rock music.
Here's two young girls that decide that they want to get involved with rock and roll, and specifically they want to become punkers. Now, I ask you, if the devil wants to pervert beauty, because whatever he had, he wants to pervert. If he was musical, he's perverted music. If he was beautiful, let's see how he perverts beauty. This is what happens to the young girls after they go to the beauty shop and become punkers. Now, to me, this is exactly what the devil is doing to the young people today. Paul Crouch Jr. went to the Cuckoo's Nest a while back to videotape a group called the Circle Jerks who were in concert. And he said the kids there were just absolutely bizarre. They had their spiky bleached hair. They had safety pin in their noses that went, little chains that went to their lip or their ear. Then they had bizarre tattered clothing and all kinds of fishnet stockings and spikes around their wristlets and spikes on their outfits. And they also had razor blades that were actually pinned on their different apparel. And one of the things that happens at punk rock clubs is a lot of bloodshed. So what happens is they do what they call slam dancing or bash dancing, and they run up against each other and hit each other, and they try to bring blood. They actually try to bring forth blood. And I thought what we do, you know, Paul said that at one point he saw that many of the kids had on their shirts red rum, the word red rum. And he couldn't figure out what is red rum until he saw one of the children go next to a mirror, and he saw backwards in the mirror it says murder. And that is the spirit behind punk rock, is murder. And also, he noticed that they would spike their hair and chop it off at weird angles, and they would have blood that would flow in the concert. And if you just look at some of the other punkers, you'll see that they just definitely ruin their hair. It's interesting that they will carve swastikas, mohawks, bizarre rounded corners into their hair.
This is punk rock, and its purpose, one observer says, is to promote violence, sex, and destruction in that order. That is, of course, not what its supporters say. The message is that the world and everything in it stinks. The need in punk rock fashion is to be outrageous, and it is. In New York, a woman can buy a punk...
and the capitalistic bourgeoisie, and distribute it among the workers, whose labor will never again be exploited for the benefit of the warmongers of Wall Street. The people's government brings the citizens of New York a new freedom, a freedom based on order, a freedom based on loyalty to the leaders of the party, your party, which will work hand in hand with the Marxist democratic leadership of all other nations, so that never again will war be necessary among the civilized peoples of the world.
Rock evening gown, complete with rips,
I've been looking
for something
the
over $1,000. Working class punk rockers can't afford that. The punk rock symbol is the safety pin. It is a rare punk performance that doesn't want...
But in a little time we have left, I want to tell you how proud you can be of the ordinary citizen of New York. It seems every man and boy today has become a guerrilla fighter. I saw taxi drivers use their cabs as weapons to mow down enemy troops. I saw high school boys attack enemy tanks with pop bottles full of gasoline. I saw mounted policemen become a fighting cavalry.
We take over now.
Oh, Ben! Oh, Ben!
The people's government of America will take the wealth from the greedy, the speculators, and the capitalistic bourgeoisie, and distribute it among the workers, whose labor will never again be exploited for the benefit of the warmongers of Wall Street.
Kijk eens, dit is een mooie roze trui.
Ja, schitterend. Pas hem eens.
En?
Hij zit prima. Maar de kleur staat je niet zo goed. Je hebt rood haar, dat is niet mooi met roze.
Ja, je hebt gelijk. Kijk, deze trui heeft een andere kleur. Hij is blauw. Zal ik die eens passen?
Ja, die kleur staat je goed. En kijk, bij die trui krijg je ook nog 10% korting.
And thus, the grotesque costuming and the significance of the extreme spiked heel and the tight boots, the riding crop, the burning cigarettes, rubber and leather garments, and all the rest. And here again, an appeal to the sodomist, with a play upon the buttocks, the laced leather garments. This picture hints at the common idea of bestiality. Dr. Sorokin, the renowned sociologist at Harvard, says that today the newsstands, quote, depict the world as a sort of human zoo, inhabited by raped, mutilated, and murdered females, and by he-males, outmatching in bestiality cavemen, and outlusting the lustiest of animals. Male and female alike are hardened in cynical contempt of human life and value, unquote.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you are depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you are dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk to you.
Rabies is a viral illness spread via the saliva of an infected animal. This occurs usually through biting a human or another animal. Transmission can also occur through saliva, touching an open wound, or touching mucous membrane. Causes. Rabies infection is caused by the rabies virus. The virus is spread through the saliva of infected animals. Infected animals can spread the virus by biting another animal or a person. In rare cases, rabies can be spread when infected saliva gets into an open wound or the mucous membranes, such as the mouth or eyes. This could occur if an infected animal were to lick an open cut on your skin. Animals that can transmit the rabies virus. Any mammal, or an animal that suckles its young, can transmit the rabies virus. The animals most likely to transmit the rabies virus to people include pets and farm animals, such as cats, cows, dogs, ferrets, goats, horses, wild animals, such as bats, beavers, coyotes, foxes, monkeys, raccoons, skunks, woodchucks. In rare cases, the virus has been
Alleen het geruis van uw bloed en van uw hart het gehamer vervullen uw lichaam. Verstaat ge? Zwicht nooit voor lippen. Samen zijn is een leugen. Groot en meeslepend wil ik leven.
Your energy draws attractive women to you. Every day more beautiful women are coming into your life. You trust
now you dump your mushrooms into a colander and drink them and...
You set the test, not the woman. Women love your light-hearted approach to life and your playful sense of humor. Women are attracted to your energy. You know with absolute certainty that women...
Het is er altijd erg leuk in carnaval, zachtig in de uitvaart.
Inmiddels is geconstateerd, ook door de overledenen, dat het echt wel een vak is. En dat er gevaren bij komen. En dat de voorzieningen niet zo geweldig zijn op een begraafplaats.
Wat is het gevaar dan?
Het grote gevaar is het instorten. Dat de boel die ernaast ligt, dus gaat schuiven naar het midden toe.
En dan wordt het een rommeltje.
En dan wordt het dus een rommeltje. En dan gaat het goed.
Een plexiglazen kist met een koepel erop. Wilt u daar ook in?
Mijn vrouw legt er al in. En een kind van me legt erin. Mijn graf is niet zo groot. In mijn graf is mijn plaats voor 3
hitties. Oh, lekker efficiënt.
Ja, dat is
En allemaal op een rijtje?
Allemaal op een rij.
En allemaal hetzelfde?
Nou, als ik met dat ding erop kom, dan steekt hij de bovenuit. Dat ken
ik. Zuster Alfons, die fronst haar wenkbrauwen. Wat vindt u daar nou van?
Nou, ik vind dat gewoon luguber.
Ja, in het begin lijkt het een beetje, ja, wat zal ik zeggen, een beetje harteloos of zo, maar ja, efficiënt het is.
Zoiets heb ik nog nooit gezien. Veel eigenaardig vind ik dat.
Ach, daar ben ik al 48 jaar gewend. Dus. Als je maar ergens in ligt.
Vreselijk. Nu even denken, hoe gaan ze dan mee naar de kerk? Ik denk wel eens, als ze nou al die leuke dingen is deden terwijl de mensen nog leefden, ja?
Er wordt een apparaat in. Ja.
If it's gonna be a bloodbath, let it be a bloodbath. What I say is, kill for peace, that's the slogan.
Was finden Sie an diesem Kerl?
Er bringt mich zum Lachen. Ja.
After much consideration, I would like to apologize to you, my fellow Americans, for my actions, crimes, and lies that caused so much division and harm to this great country. As your president, it was my responsibility to unite all Americans, and I have failed bigly and historically. I hope you can find it in your hearts to forgive me for the many mistakes I made. And join me in supporting a good man, our President Joe Biden, to create a brighter future for this country we love. Thank you, and may God bless America.
Father God, we humble ourselves in this place to program right into your mind and your intellect, whether you want to or not. Now let's listen to that, the 23rd Psalm on the song sheet. Listen, for the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I shall not word, I can you. Now, you've been listening to the lyrics and you could barely make them out. I'm going to read the lyrics to you off the jet.
Airing on Asheville FM, 103.3 LPFM in Asheville, this is The Final Straw Radio, a weekly anarchist and anti-authoritarian broadcast and podcast emanating out of occupied Chalagee land in southern Appalachia. We bring you voices and perspectives from projects and struggles all around the world, and you can find our archives, transcripts, ways to follow us and support us at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. This week, we're sharing two segments in the episode. Two members of the DFW Support Committee returned to give a rundown of sentencing in that case, with people receiving decades up to a century in relation to a noise demonstration in support of detainees at the Prairieland ICE detention facility on July 4th of 2025. This case is also framed in terms of Trump's State Department's declaration of Antifa as a terrorist organization and his NSPM7 memo entitled Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence, unquote, declaring that the intention was to prosecute those motivated to violence by views of, quote, anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, and anti-Christianity, support for the overthrow of the United States government, extremism on migration, race, and gender, and hostility towards those who hold traditional American views on the family, religion, and morality. So here a discussion about this sentencing and the implications of this for other cases in this chat. You can check our show notes for past discussions related to the suppression of anti-fascists by the federal government, related conspiracy cases, and some about the implications of the terror designation to anti-fascist movements in other countries in our show notes. Then you'll hear a guest speak about a recent court case involving two individuals in the Great Lakes region who took action against flock surveillance cameras. You'll hear some insights into the sorts of evidence presented, the defendants' experiences of incarceration, and how you can send support their way as they do their bid. So we're joined by two members of the DFW Defense Committee, or the Prairie Land Defense Committee, to speak about the recent sentencing in the federal case of the Prairie Land defendants, the second round of which has just happened this week. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we are glad to be here.
So we have past episodes talking about the situation as the witch hunt has unfolded, and there's lots of good info at prairielanddefendants.com that's constantly being updated with court notes and all sorts of other stuff, statements from the defendants. But could you give listeners a quick rundown of the case in case they're hearing about this for the first time?
Sure. So on July 4th, 2025, a group of people held a noise demonstration at the Prairie Land Detention Center. The Prairie Land Detention Center is about, hour and a half south of Fort Worth, Texas, in a county called Johnson County, and in the city limits of Alvarado, Texas. And the Prairie Land Detention Center is, you know, one of the many detention centers in Texas that is holding folks who have been kidnapped by ICE. So I'm kind of coming off of the first round of people challenging ICE's kidnappings and illegitimate murders. People wanted to do something to let the detainees know that they weren't forgotten, that we were thinking about them. Right. And building on the tradition of noise demos that have been happening for a long time, right? People do noise demos often on New Year's Eve at jails. So they went out to Prairie Land to do a noise demo. They set off some fireworks outside of the property lines. And then somebody of their own accord did some vandalization. And then the detention center called the police. Police officer Gross showed up within 6 seconds of showing up. He was already had his weapon drawn and was shooting at the back of a protester who was fleeing. And one of the protesters that was there fired suppressive fire on the ground in order to kind of interrupt what was happening. And it seems very possible that a ricochet from that or something else happened, and the police officer was shot in the shoulder. And then at that point, everyone who had been present at the protest was arrested, even if they were blocks away walking to their car. And then there was a wider set of people that were arrested. And so all of those people arrested kind of constitute the Prairie Land defendants. There are 22 people in total now. So there is the like initial 11 that were arrested on July 4th. And then there was a manhunt for Benjamin Champagne Song. And through that process, there was a number of other people who were arrested. So in February, March, 9 of the 11 arrested had a federal trial on a range of charges from riot to use of explosives. So they're claiming that the fireworks are quote unquote explosives. The biggest thing that people have been focusing on is a charge of the material support of terrorism, which the basis for that material support of terrorism was attempted murder. So some people were also tried on attempted murder. And yeah, the other underlying charge for the material support of terrorism was the vandalism that happened. And then there was a smaller set of people had attempted murder charges and discharge of a weapon. And so the trial happened. We have called it a show trial. I don't want to get into the depths of the trial, because once we get going, it goes really deep. Would encourage people to listen to earlier Final Straw episodes about it. There's a lot of improprieties with the trial, including a mistrial. And so at the end of the trial, the defendants were found guilty. All of them were found guilty of the riot charge, the material support of terrorism, the use and carry of explosives. The only person found guilty of attempted murder was Champagne Song. And the only person found guilty of the use of a weapon was Champagne Song. So actually, several of defendants were found not guilty on the attempted murder charges. In our reading of this verdict, the verdict is really political and is about this group of people's beliefs. One of the things that happened is that the defense attorneys decided to not mount a defense, decided to rest instead of mount a defense, which was a decision they made without the support of the defense committee. And that had a pretty disastrous impact for people. However, the interesting thing, right, if you look at the charges and you look at what was found guilty and not, right? The whole idea behind this from the government is that this was an ambush, a terrorist act, an ambush to kill ICE agents, which Alvarado police officer's not an ICE agent. He wasn't even on the scene. And they were all found not guilty, aside from Benjamin Song, who has said that he shot the gun of the attempted murder charges. So it's really clear the jury was not buying the ambush idea. And they were not buying that this was some sort of pre-planned attack by this group of people. But it does seem like that they did buy the state's narrative that this was an Antifa cell that was dangerous, and that going out and doing a noise demo, dressing in black, having first aid kits, all these sorts of things potentially are things that we should criminalize, right? That's sort of some of the takeaway from the verdict. The way federal things work is that there is a period of time between when people get found guilty and their sentencing. In state cases, this is like people get very confused about this. In state cases, the sentencing happens very quickly, often right after the trial. In federal cases, that's not the case because they have a whole process that they go through. It's called the pre-sentencing report, in which a probation officer goes through and looks at all your records and all this sort of stuff and comes up with a certain amount of points that you should have towards your sentencing, which then determines what kind of sentence you should get. And so very early on, once these pre-sentencing reports came out, it was really clear to us that the deck was going to be stacked against everyone. Everyone's reports came back completely maxed. So we're talking about a group of people have no prior criminal histories. Several people, this is their first protest, right? So normally you would look at the group of defendants and be like, these are folks with families, they had full-time jobs, they are parts of communities, they do not have prior convictions. All of these factors, which would normally bring people's sentencing points down, and they did not because they chose to include a terrorist enhancement charge. So everybody's sentence points for the PSR were maxed. So when we saw that, we knew that the likelihood of them getting any sort of leniency was not going to happen. We kind of didn't expect it anyways. And then one of the options, right, is that the judge can decide for all of the sentences for the charges to either happen at the same time. So you can serve your time for the riot and the material support of terrorism at the same time, or they can be stacked after each other. And so we knew that that was going to be one of the main factors. And given how hostile the judge has been, given what the Trump administration has said about this case, we knew as a committee and the defendants knew that there was no way that they were going to get any leniency. So we fully expected them to be getting these 50 to 60 year sentences that they got.
So yeah, you mentioned that a lot of these people, this was their first protest. The state was asserting that people had a pre-existing plan to conduct an ambush and so applied these terrorism enhancements. And they were focused, in my understanding, they were focused primarily just because of past of covering prosecution of leftists around the country. There have been like a few of the, at least one of the people, Champagne, has been a member in the past or participant in actions like community armed self-defense actions with what I think the state was pointing to when they were saying the North Texas Antifa terror cell, the John Brown Gun Club in that region, correct?
I don't think that's quite accurate. Okay. I think that this North Texas Antifa cell brand or whatever term that the government invented, this is the first time that when the indictment dropped in November, that was the first time that word had ever been uttered in public. That was a complete fabrication by the government. But at early on, what they articulated it as this very confusing sort of coalition of the Socialist Rifle Association and the Emma Goldman Book Club, which was a monthly gathering where people met and read a zine together. That was long running. And what I think is important about that definition is that it followed the vagueness and the political nature of Antifa as a term laid out in the NPSM-7, the Antifa domestic terrorist designation, whatever, if people have heard about that, where it's a catch-all term for the far left. And so they didn't even attempt to claim an organizational affinity, an organizational unity, like a clear identity of these people as something. For them, a network of people doing left-wing activities counted as a cell. And those activities being anti-fascist are terroristic in nature. So I think it's actually really important to realize that the federal government's use of this Antifa term doesn't require it to be an organization or even to have one single organization underlying it. They're using it in a much more nebulous, creative way that kind of was on full display in this case.
That's perfect. I'm glad that you brought in the national security memo and the implications of this, because the implications for this, and some media commentators have kind of caught up on this, and definitely like legal workers have caught up on this, the implications that these people didn't in fact have to have a pre-existing like relationship with each other and didn't have to all be on the same page, didn't even have to be physically at the event, just had to have relationships, is literally criminalizing relationships and a political perspective. And mm-hmm. not only that, but tacking the terrorism enhancement and terrorism style charges to it, and language, which is a right. you know, a huge trigger for a lot of people. They're like, 9/11, okay, get them.
Right. Yeah.
And so this is a part of a wider attack by the federal government through certain judges in a very friendly to them jurisdiction against leftist or oppositional grassroots social movements. Secondly, and you had mentioned explosives, that being what they named fireworks in this case. This was 4th of July. This was Texas.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Fourth, like New Year's Eve noise demos, also people bring fireworks.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, this was like, you can see the videos on some of the social media from the support committee, where it's clear that it's like going off across the road or like a space yeah. away, that it's not like being directed at an individual. It's not directed at right. a building right. and causing damage. There was showing right. that there was no damage from that. The vandalism, I think, was a little bit of spray painting and some car tires getting slashed in the parking lot, right?
Yeah, and a camera got broken.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's not anti-personnel stuff. It's not undermining yeah. the stability of the of the building by Viet Cong style, like tunneling underneath the building. And
No. It's like nothing.
Yeah, it's like, well, and I
it's
think
it's like a Saturday night in downtown Dallas.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, if it was a sports like, game, they'd think nothing of
during the finals.
Yeah.
I think that the thing that people should know, and we probably have come across this in previous episodes, but that the proceedings in the court, like the facts that came out during trial, pretty universally lined up with the interpretation of this as a pretty normal demo. In fact, I would describe it as a kind of boring demo. It was small. They set off some fireworks. They were there for like an hour. You know, like it was a small, normal demo. The shooting aspect of it was abnormal, and that created, to some extent, political cover for the government to create this fantasy narrative around it. But I think that, you know, when people who are kind of, I don't know, like that situation seems complicated, like they should know that in trial, the evidence that came out, and you can look at our notes and the transcript's going to be out pretty soon. Like, you should know that, like, it was a normal demo. Yeah. Like, these people didn't do anything crazy.
Yeah.
The story is the government's response.
And in fact, a number of people showed up late, stood around, left before the shooting ever happened, before the police really ever got there. Right. And they have been tied into this conspiracy. And the other piece of this that we hit on earlier is that a number of defendants have never met each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like these are different sort of social groups and different bodies of people. And that's so normal at a demo. Right. Like you may show up to a demo and like you don't know half of the people. Mm-hmm. Right.
The commonality being a concern about the mass incarceration and deportation of people's neighbors and loved
right.
ones.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
And yeah.
this is on a legal front. This is very similar to the way they prosecuted the Spokane 3, where in Spokane, they got people found guilty on conspiracy charges to, I forget what it was, impede an officer or something.
Yeah.
But the conspiracy, they argued in court, didn't require people to have had prior conversation, that merely spontaneously deciding to participate in a collective action itself was a conspiracy. And they got found guilty on that. And this is a theory that, you know, I think what we're seeing is that the federal government is poking in different areas, trying different things to see what sticks and see where they can make headway on.
And like, I think, right, like you said this earlier, like this stuff lands differently here than what's going to happen with the Minnesota case, because it's really clear that in Minnesota, where they're going after those 15 people, like Prairie Land is the blueprint for that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Minnesota is a different political climate on the ground. However, Washington is supposed to be a progressive state, and the Spokane 3 were found guilty because not all of Washington is Seattle, right? Not all of Oregon is Portland, right? And like, actually,
not
honestly,
all of New York is New York City.
Right. And honestly, if the defendants had been in Dallas, this would have been a very different conversation mm-hmm. than Fort Worth, which is like a 45-minute drive. So, I mean, that level of locality matters, but I think the other piece is that, like, you know, they're going to use this in as many places as they can now to see how far they can get, right? Like, I mean, you look at, if people haven't looked at the indictment on the Minnesota 15, like, it's worth looking at.
Again, because they're attempting to criminalize what I would call very normal organizing activities.
Right.
You know, if you look at that indictment, there's all this discussion of like, oh, can I use your space to build some stuff for an action? Like, let's have a meeting at this spot, you know, like leave your phone at the door or whatever, right? Things that like are very normal, I would say good organizing practices. And they're attempting to criminalize them and call them a criminal conspiracy.
Yeah.
It looked like from the videos that I saw that Champagne had, like the gun was drawn, there was the assumption that the officer was going to use lethal force against someone who was walking away, and Champagne intervened to lay suppressing fire near their own feet, you know, in comparison to how far they were from the officer. Did the officer let off any rounds?
Yes.
The officer definitely did one
testified
of the rounds.
Testified to that in trial.
The one of the rounds hit Champagne's gun.
Oh, that's right.
The broadside.
Okay.
And Pittman said this in sentencing,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I think part of what's happening right now is because the discovery is under seal. So normally in these cases, we would get to see a lot more. And when you mount a defense, you get to see a lot more of the evidence. And we have a small amount of the evidence and people are poring over it. And
the evidence that was presented at trial.
That was presented at trial. And there is a lot of questions around the timeline around the shooting. I think there is some questions in terms of still, did Gross shoot first or not, given some of the like sounds, the ballistics, all these sorts of things, right? Which normally when you mount a defense, you would have a ballistics expert and you would lay all of this in court. And the thing is that didn't happen. And so now kind of the committee and other people that support the defendants are trying to do that work to try and really understand the facts of what happened with the evidence that was presented. So I guess I would say that I think that it's not totally clear, but Gross did shoot. And it seems very possible that Gross shot first still. I mean, Gross shot enough to hit Champagne's gun and make a dent. I mean, it does seem really clear that probably Champagne saved Nathan Bauman's life with the suppressive fire.
Nathan Bauman was the person who was running away.
Who had done most of the graffiti.
Most, if not all. Potentially all. And,
so
Bauman actually also, this is, we can get in, maybe we're going to bleed now into the sentencing stuff, but Bauman cooperated and testified at trial. Bauman only received, the smallest sentence,
22
only 22
months,
less than 2 years. Bauman is the person who did the vandalism that is the underlying crime for the material support of terrorism.
And Bauman is from College Station, has no relationship to any of the people. Ken Klippenstein, on his website, so the transcript to the trial is not public yet. He was able to get some portion of the transcript. He was focusing on Kyle Scheidler, who's the Antifa expert. However, the beginning of the transcript is Nathan Bauman's testimony, and I would highly recommend people go read it. From the start, you're like, this kid is just saying whatever the F he wants to say. Because that's what his basically maybe lawyers they found on TV told him to do. There's a lot of questions around him, I think. He goes by a different last name. Some people in his community have come forward. There is an allegation of abuse against him by a former partner. There's a lot of questions about him, but he was not really connected to anyone. What is said in the testimony is that he went to a No Kings march and he met someone in Black Box. They had a conversation. He got signed up to a Signal announcement list where the flyer for this noise demo went out, because this is a normal noise demo and people publicized it through mostly Signal. And he just showed up of his own accord with some spray paint and did his thing, right? And like, so he had no relational ties to anyone, which I think is something significant for the movement to think about. One of the things I think that is a challenge this poses is like, as things move forward and people act in bold and courageous ways because of the times that we're in, right? And people need to stop things like kidnappings and the other kinds of things that are going on. Folks are going to come out of the woodwork to take this bold and courageous action, and they may not be connected to people. And so what does support look like so that folks don't decide, because they're not in a community or because they're not connected, that it's in their best interest to go against everyone else? And that's kind of an instance of what happened here in this situation. And so, you know, Pittman on the stand basically patted him on the head and said, oh, this poor kid was caught up in this Antifa cell. Clearly he's not Antifa, even though he signed in his plea agreement. He's a part of Antifa as a part of his facts, right? So like when you start looking at the factual statements and what people said on the stand, you're like, wait a minute, there's a lot of discrepancies. We would call that perjury.
I think the other aspect too, and maybe this is a good transition to talking about sentencing, is we have to really understand that the sentences are political. They were meted down for political purposes as a political act, and the message to be sent, which Judge O'Connor, who was a second judge who was brought in for sentencing, basically said on the stand, they are trying to discourage people to identify with this ideology, quote unquote, or these beliefs. And so Nathan Bauman, being someone who was young and not connected, they saw it differently, mm-hmm. right? Because they weren't punishing the acts, right? These sentences are not related to the acts for which they are found guilty. These sentences are based on the politics of the people involved, and they are punishing their politics. So Nathan Bauman, not being very engaged in the politics, got a lighter sentence. And the people who were engaged in the politics, like Champagne or Liz or Inez, those people got the maximum. Mahdi, Dez. I mean, the other example is Dez, right? People have heard about this, you know, 30 years for zines. Dez is Maricela's partner or spouse, was moving a box of his own stuff from his parents' house to a friend's house. They arrested him and claimed that he was trying to conceal evidence, and he was found guilty and now sentenced for 30 years. He was not at the demonstration. He was not involved in the planning of the demonstration. He's just Maricela's spouse, and he had a box of zines that he was moving from one house to another. So the punishment there is the politics, right? They don't believe that someone should be allowed to move this box of zines because of the content of the zines.
Yeah, let's talk about sentencing. So you mentioned Bauman's sentencing. I guess however you want to approach it, there were two rounds of sentencing in this.
Yes. Okay, so there's kind of two sets of sentences that happen. There's the folks that were a part of the federal trial, and then there's the people who pled. And then of the pled, we have sort of two groups of people who did not cooperate, who have not testify, have not given interviews. And then the group of people who did cooperate and testified at the state trial against the Prairie Land defendants. So the people who went to trial, who were all found guilty of various charges, their sentences were maxed. So we have Dez, who we just talked about, who got 30 years for the two charges he had, which were related to moving this box of zines, which they claim was him concealing evidence, just not what it was. So we have Savannah, Liz, Inez, Megan, Autumn, Zachary Evitz received 50 years. Maricela Rueda received 7 years because she was also added to the charges with Dez. So she had two extra charges. She received 70 years, and then Champagne Song received 100 years. So these are crazy sentences. These sentences are higher than most people get for murder, actually. Many of these folks are in their 30s and 40s, and it is, in essence, a life sentence for them, right? Liz and Inez are 40 or 41 now. That would mean that they would get out when they're 91 years old, potentially. So, I mean, that's, I think Liz said it best when she said, way to give me a life sentence without saying that it's life. So that was the kind of first set of people. Inez was actually sentenced this week, but Inez is a part of this federal trial group. So then you have the non-cooperating plea deal folks. We have two folks, Joey Rowan Gibson and Rebecca Morgan. Rowan Gibson was actually at the protest, and Rebecca Morgan is a part of what we call the manhunt cases, so the set of cases around them attempting to find Champagne. And both of them were given the max of their plea deals, which was 15 years. This is significant because Rebecca Morgan, several weeks ago, suffered what constitutes sort of like a heart attack at Wichita County Jail. She was not breathing for an extended period of time. They had to defibrillate her several times. She then was taken to the hospital. They refused to give any information to her mother or her family whatsoever, and even actually her lawyer at some point. She showed back up at the jail. And so she is not receiving adequate medical treatment for the heart condition that they have discovered that she has. And yet she was still given 15 years, and her lawyer did bring this up. And then we have the set of cooperators. So we have Lynette Sharp and John Philip Thomas. They received 9 years. Seth Sykes received 6 years. Nathan Bauman received 22 months. And then Susan Kent has not been sentenced yet. She's also a cooperator. Her lawyer asked for continuance. And so I think she's going to be sentenced later on the 6th of July. And we expect that probably she will get somewhere between the 6 and the 9 years. I think It's notable, like we talked a little bit about Bauman's sentencing. It's notable to us that the non-cooperating plea folks got significantly higher sentences than the folks who cooperated. I mean, 9 years is still a lot of time, but compared to the two other folks who were not cooperating who got 15, you know, and all of these folks that cooperated testified at trial. When the transcript comes out, everyone can go and see their testimonies and see what they said about the people that they claim to be their friends and community. You know, and I think the kind of levels of betrayal and the feelings that come out of that, right? You know, people have those about this situation. I think when we think about this in a little more abstract, right? Why do we encourage people to assert their Fifth Amendment rights, to assert their rights to maintain silence? In part, it's a safety thing.